the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Well, staying in the US, our next guest is an Irish woman who is one of the few leading female chief technology officers in publicly listed companies in the States. Siobhan McFeeney is the CTO of Kohl's, a huge US retail chain. Her journey to that job has been full of diversions, including two summit attempts on Mount Everest, and we'll get to that later. But Siobhan, you're from a family of seven in Dublin. I understand you started out training as an accountant in Ireland under advice from your mother. Was that it?
Oh, God, yeah. Well, advice is a loose word. You will be doing this. And I was like, yes, mother, I will be doing that. The civil service or an accountant. Those were my two paths.
And at the time, did you have the idea of going abroad in your mind? I mean, it was at a time when a lot of Irish people were emigrating. And was that something that you had kind of in your sights?
I did. I really did want to go to the States. Don't know where it came from. Just always wanted to do that. And it was that era where the Morrison visas, and if you remember the Morrison visas, you could apply for one. It was a lottery. And so I did. I'm pretty sure I didn't tell anyone I was applying, and I got it. And then my younger brother got one too. And we made a very secret plan to escape. No, we did tell people at that time. And yeah, I was thrilled when I got it. I really wanted to leave. It was a really fun time to be kind of leaving. Sad, obviously, but a lot of fun.
Yeah, it kind of felt a bit like the Willy Wonka golden ticket at that time, you know, if you could
Absolutely.
Land one of those. And you went to Chicago. And what kind of job did you get at first?
I worked in a couple of restaurants and a bar. I mean, it was no like you land a big fat job day one. So, you know, a little bit of grit is probably needed. And then maybe 6 months in, I got a job at Deloitte as an accountant. Stayed there for a little bit. And I think kind of that big turn in my career was when I joined Amoco, which at the time was the American Oil Company. The Deloitte building was right next to the Amoco building, and it was right on the lakeshore in Chicago. And I knew that their offices were on the 80th floor and they had a great view. So I pursued it and I was like, I'm going to work there.
Because you like the look of the building.
Yes, I did.
Why not?
Not a lot of research was done. It was just like, I'd like to work in that building. And so I kept at it until I did.
So you're working for Amoco and you're in the fancy building. And that actually then gives you opportunities to travel.
Yeah, I am. I ended up working for this extraordinary individual, Charlie Hall, who then kind of opened doors for me, probably more than I was capable for at the time. And I started to travel, not just obviously in the States, but obviously right after I joined, BP merged with Amoco, and BP being a massive global company, I got to spend time in Hong Kong. And I ended up, actually, the end of my career at BP was in London. Great time at BP, but I decided I didn't want to spend the rest of my life in London, even though I had enjoyed it. Came back to San Francisco. And I fancy myself quite the baker, not as good as some of the people in my family, but I opened a very small bakery, and it was kind of an experiment to see if you really did have good product, would you be taken seriously by, you know, big players like Pete's Coffee or Starbucks? And so kind of ran an experiment and short story, got a meeting in front of the chief marketing officer of Pete's Coffee, and they offered, they you know, sort of bid out their baked goods to certain bakeries, and they were like, yep, you can join the bidding, to which I then had to come clean and tell them that it was me on my own in my kitchen, which was exciting, but also like,
conversation killer, was it? Did that end the conversation?
Oh, yes, very abruptly. Yes. He was like, thank you very much. And please leave in a lovely way. But I think they thought I had some big operation. And I actually remember he went, so, you know, how big is your team? And I'm like, you know, it's strong to very strong, like it's me. And anyway, I was like, so, you know what? It's actually me. I don't think I can scale. But thank you so much for the meeting. But it was a great experiment. Like, could you break through? And I said to myself, I could. And then I had a chat with Terry, my husband, and he was like, so will you be getting a real job now? And I said, yes, sir, I will indeed.
But it's interesting because you had a real job and you had what mm-hmm. people might call a real job for years, and you traveled the world. And then you decided with the bakery business to kind of step off that train, really, and just do something completely different. You don't seem at all worried about taking a risk or going down some unconventional route in your career?
No, I don't know. It's I don't know if it's just in me, or I believe that if you have a passion to do something and you have a good support network, let's be honest, right? Like Terry was like, absolutely, go give it a run. That, you know, you'll have another shot at the more traditional route if you want. And this wasn't, I mean, I've done this my whole career, sort of done bobs and weaves and step back, and I've turned down promotions if I didn't think it was the right one. And maybe it's a little bit cheeky, but it's kind of worked out, just sort of going with my gut.
And there is a determination that comes across, Siobhan, and I think that is probably reflected in your own adventures on mountains, because you were always into hiking, but you've tackled Everest not once but twice.
Yes, there's a whole therapy session in that one, I'm sure. I actually my parents are huge Inuga fans, and we grew up hiking across the mountains our holidays for years, and I think it just, that bug stayed with me. I climbed a lot in America, in Alaska and South America, so I find it fascinating. And I've really been fascinated with Everest. Who hasn't, right? We've all seen the Into Thin Air and all the films. And so I decided in 2013 to try it. I will be truly honest. It was the going away for 6 to 8 weeks and having 4 kids. I'm sure there's a lot of feelings about that. It's just a lot. It's much more than you can even anticipate. The climb was not the hard part. It was not being, you know, with the family for that length of time. It was an amazing, phenomenal experience. Crazy country, love Nepal. The people are fabulous. And I didn't summit, I didn't summit that time. I was on the way to the summit, but had to turn around because I got pneumonia. But
were you close to the top?
Yeah, we were on the summit push. And it's one of those, it's a complicated thing. You absolutely know that it's just hours away. And you absolutely know that if you do it, that will be the last thing you do. And so you have to make the decision to turn around. And then just to make it even more complicated, as you go down, obviously you feel better, right? Altitude is decreasing. And so you have this mind game like, well, I'm better now. So if I just turn around, I could run up there. And crazy, but you really do have to just be determined. And so, yeah, I turned around and the whole way down thought, what if I could go back just this one time? I did not, obviously. And I did return to Everest, though, in 2015.
Did you feel that if you had have pressed on and tried to push through it, that you could have died?
Yes, absolutely. It's just a mathematics. It's not complicated. My O2 sat was in the teens. Higher altitude at 29,000 feet would have brought it down further. I would have drowned. Like, just not even a question. But it is such, I mean, there's an ego involved, just to be very honest, right? You're standing there and you're like, I'm going to summit. And you're like, and then I'm going to die. So maybe I'll just, go down the mountain. It's an interesting one, but you do have to have your ego in check on that mountain.
So how determined were you to go back, given those circumstances? Because you might have felt lucky. Anybody could feel lucky that I am down. I made the right decision. I'm okay. I'm well. But that sense of frustration about it was there, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. And also just, I do like to, I'm fine if I don't, succeed the first time, but I don't like to sort of give up on things, if that sounds understandable in any way. So I really had an idea, if the circumstances were right, I could do this. And I took a break for the year and then I went back in 2015, and I'm pretty determined. I'm a bit of a ambitious human. So I, went back, and unfortunately that year was a very difficult year for that country in the mountain. They had that huge earthquake, 8.2 earthquake, while I was climbing it. So,
Climbing?
Yeah.
What happened?
The Khumbu Icefall is between base camp and camp one. It's this monstrous sort of ice navigation, these boulders of ice the size of apartment buildings. And you navigate it pretty early at night, so it's cold and it stays as stable as possible. You try and get through it as fast as possible. It's quite, it moves, as you can imagine. And an earthquake happened while we were in the ice fall, when I was actually on an aluminium ladder climbing a vertical piece of ice. And I actually thought it was an avalanche. I didn't really understand what was happening because I was in the middle of the ladder. And then the earthquake happened and we realized something really terrible was happening. And
what did you see around you, or what did that feel like?
Oh, just ice and snow just coming at us. And I mean, this is not trivial at all, but like the ladders flying back and forth. And I am literally, I can't say the words I was thinking at the time on this, but I was like, are you joking? And I was with seven or eight other people. And we do not know what reason, but we walked out of there, and many, many people didn't that day. But for the grace of God, go us. I don't know how we were left untouched in the middle of this just train wreck around us. Everything got destroyed and we were in this little block of ice and we were able to walk out. It was insane.
So there was a randomness really to where you were when it hit. I mean, and people died that day.
No, that's the right way to describe it. Very randomness. And people died on the mountain, people died at base camp, and a lot of people died in the country of Nepal. The earthquake just destroyed the infrastructure. So it was, 10 years ago this year.
And was it difficult to sort of pull yourself together immediately after that, to get your composure, to even get down at that stage?
Well, interestingly enough, Richard, we had to go up because down was gone. Everything beneath us was gone. So we had to climb to base or to camp one and wait there for a few days until a helicopter came and got us with a host of other people. This is one of the things. The team I was with were so extraordinary. We had an amazing guide and seven other climbers. And for whatever reason, they all were like this as well, but this is just one of my own quirks. When it gets very intense, or whether it's work or whatever, I tend to calm pretty and I get very easy and slow. So in intense situations, I calm and slow way down. And so did all the climbers with me. And I think that was part of how we got out. I think everyone just took a breath. We took it slowly and we just made decisions to get out of there. There was no panickers. Nobody was freaking out. Very still, actually. It was a very interesting reaction to it.
Would you go back again? Would you make a third attempt?
I'm not allowed to say that. I would. I'm always thinking about what would I do next. I don't have any plans to climb Everest anytime soon, but you never know.
I think I do know. Is your overriding sense of it that glad to have come out of something like that alive, but also gutted that I didn't quite make it to the top?
I was gutted in 2013. I wasn't gutted in 2015. I was just unbelievably grateful. That was, climbing was completely not the thing after that. I didn't think about any of that. I love climbing. My kids climb now. It's been amazing. Absolutely.
Well, it's a long way from climbing Everest to chief technology officer at Kohl's in San Francisco. How did the technology piece come together and Kohl's? How did that job happen?
It really was one of those another take a risk here. I decided to join a startup and really understand software development and product development like at its core. So it was when tech startups were going nuts in San Francisco, and I really felt that if I didn't understand it and have real practical experience, that my career wouldn't be as rich. Like, I wouldn't have the same opportunities. Don't know why. That's just how I felt. It was a good risk. It paid off. And obviously that startup was a colossal failure. We had a great time, but spent all our money. And I then ended up joining a company called Pivotal Labs, which was another insane pivot in my career. Fabulous company, building pioneering technology. And I got to run digital transformation for them. I'd had the big company experience like AAA and BP, and then I'd understood technology at its core. So it was a good mix. And I spent several years there, and I got a call from an old boss of mine, and he said, hey, I'm at this company called Kohl's, huge retailer in America. And he goes, we could turn the technology organization here around based on all of the things that you've done at Pivotal, all of the companies, you know, I was consulting for a long time, helping companies. And he said, why wouldn't you do it here? And it was like 6 weeks before the pandemic. Of course, I didn't know that. And I was like, yeah, why not? I'd never done retail before. And so that's kind of how the technology and then the opportunity at Kohl's came to bear.
And Siobhan, you've changed career and reinvented yourself in many respects along the way. And your husband has done a bit of pivoting himself. He's from Texas, is he?
He is from Texas. He's probably my funnest transformation story, to be honest.
Getting him out of Texas, that was the first pivot, was it?
Hey, that was my biggest feat ever. It's completely done. It's, Terry's fabulous. Terry was in real estate for 30 years. And gosh, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, very candidly, this is how it went down. He said, I think I'll do a course. I want to like keep learning and do something else. And in the vein of like crochet or something, something minor. And then I find out, I'm like, where is he? One evening, I was like, aren't you making dinner tonight? He had started a master's in like aerospace science or aerospace engineering. I'm like, hang on a second. I thought we were doing a little course. COVID hit. Obviously, the real estate business was no longer going to be easy. And then he did more studies and kept going. And now he's doing his PhD in space studies focused on developing new food supplies for astronauts and working with partners on space trash. And he has a startup called Space for All. It's insane. The man has so much going on and doing his PhD at the same time. And he turned 60. So the story, right? You can change your career at any time. You can be what you want to be if you have the passion.
America is in a real state of change at the moment, whether it's Donald Trump, whether it's a whole load of other things, the politics, the social discourse. California is seen as a very liberal state. San Francisco, a very quite a relaxed liberal town, although it's also got the whole Silicon Valley on its doorstep. What's it like living there now in America at the moment, in at a time when it feels like it's quite tense?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about this a lot. I feel like it's a global thing, to be honest. I feel like the world is a little bit holding its breath, if you will, and things feel a little bit menacing globally. It's not a great spot to be in. I mean, the reason we live in California, we obviously love this part of the country. It's a very welcoming and open city to be in. And, you know, it aligns with how we believe and want to treat people. So it's been good for us. But yeah, it's complicated out there right now. There's so much going on. I honestly, this is all you can get down a rabbit hole on this. I just say to my kids every single day, do something nice, say something nice and make someone else feel good today. And do that every single day. This is what we can control. There's a lot of stuff outside of our control right now. So just be kind.
From a distance, the US seems a very divided society politically, and we've seen the elections and so forth. But when you're there, you're living in San Francisco, do you experience an increased sense of division, or is it just your actual day-to-day life? Things don't really change that much.
I think it's hard to avoid the fact that, the States and more, as I say, more broadly, things have started to shift globally, and things are not quite as they were in 2016, 2020. And so you can't avoid it. There is a reality of different shifts and more polarization. It's real. It's there. Even if you try and avoid the news, it is there. And it does affect you, whether it's how you buy your goods or whatever those choices are and things that are changing in the current administration here. You cannot avoid that. You've got to sort of zoom in and out, right? Day to day, it feels quite similar. But, the world is changing, and this country is under kind of a lot of tension and pressure right now. And hopefully we make good choices and better choices to come out of it.
One of the things that California, and I suppose San Francisco in particular, would have been so well known for in the world of work and employment and the corporate world was diversity and, the pursuit of more diversity policies in hiring. There seems to be quite a rollback on that. Is that something that would concern you or that you've seen?
I worry. So if you think back in 2020 when there was a huge movement, lots of not just companies, but, got across the globe, people were very focused and did an intentional move towards diversity, equity and inclusion. And I've always felt if that was embedded in the nature and the fabric of your company, and it was a focus, did you then have to, I understand it wasn't for a lot of companies. That's why there was an intentional move. And so my hope for this, because I can't change what companies are doing or what they're sort of succumbing to or feeling under pressure for. But what I really have believed is, if that's a part of your just base value system, like human kindness, that example of what you do doesn't have to be some program, but it does have to make sure that we're tolerant and accepting of others. Like that has to be the baseline. But I've always believed that to be the baseline. And I really do hope that we can get back there.
And as a chief technology officer in a very large company, there probably aren't that many women CTOs. And, how do you feel about the possibility of of that number maybe not increasing because you see these changes in diversity policies?
Yeah, it's look, it's a bigger number in Europe, actually. It's, I think, in the teens. It's much lower here, probably 6 to 8% of the CTO and CDOs in large public companies being female. It's so funny, Richard. I gave a talk yesterday at a female university to a bunch of software developers. And I said to them, look, there are pressures out there and there are biases and all of that is real. And you can lament it. But what you can do is actually something that's actionable. So make sure, like, if you have intention to get to a CTO at some company and you want to figure out a career path. And I just told them, I was like, you know, connect with me on LinkedIn, set up time with me. We'll work on a plan together. I can't change how companies hire and promote leaders. It's very depressing. I wish I could, but I certainly can help this group of women. We can do more. Like, it's not a fair world, absolutely, but we're living in a very privileged part of it. So let's take action on what we can. So yesterday I was just, I got, and then of course I had like 20 people sign up for one-on-ones and I'm like,
your LinkedIn is busy now. Your diary is full up, is it?
It is a little bit, but it's all good. These women are going to be the next generation. So I'm happy to do it. But I'm not Pollyanna. It isn't fair out there. It's hard. I've had lots of setbacks in my career and I've had lots of opportunities. But I believe that I have an ability to influence my career. I believe that deeply. And it has helped as opportunities have come up. It really has.
Well, Siobhan McPheeney, Chief Technology Officer of retail giant Kohl's in the United States. Thank you very much for joining us on the program.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.